can't hear the smoke alarm, it could already be too late. From the 1st of January 2022, landlords must install interconnected smoke alarms in residential rental properties. When one goes off, they all go off. Similar rules also apply to owner-occupiers. Learn more at qld.gov.au/smoke alarms and get interconnected. It's the law. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
On Triple M, Mining HQ. Thanks to Programmed.
Hello and welcome to the Mining HQ podcast, your go-to show for everything happening in the mining industry. I'm Pablo Miller and Chris LeMessurier joins us this week and sits down with one of our regulars, Rob Carruthers from the Chamber of Minerals and Energy. We catch up on the very latest CME industry news. David Julian Price stops past the Mining HQ show. He's a pitch coach and helps people in the resources sectors improve their speaking. Stephen Power, the executive chairman from Antipa Minerals, joins us. I chat to Tony Rivera from Azura Minerals, and we run through the big headlines from the week. But first, Florence Drummond from Indigenous Women in Mining and Resource Australia joins us, and we talk about the amazing new Australian partnership, Job Board, and some of the accolades that Florence has achieved from the industry to date. Chris, over to you.
Pablo, good morning to you. And also want to say hello to the co-founder and CEO of Indigenous Women in Mining and Resources Australia, becoming a bit of a regular. Hello, Florence Drummond.
Morning, Chris. How are you?
Oh, really well. Got the first cup of coffee, feeling good. Now, a few things have happened since we spoke last. For a start, there's a fantastic partnership. Do you want to talk about that with a conference coming up early next year in Melbourne?
Yeah, amazing. And thank you so much for that as well, Chris. Yes, many things happen on a regular basis with IWMRO. We do work very hard to make sure that we're progressing forward and taking ownership of our space. So IMARC, the largest Australian mining conference, mining conference in Australia, we've been appointed the inaugural First Nations partner, which is absolutely amazing. In line with other conferences such as PDAC over in Canada, in Darbo over in Africa, this is such a significant moment for IWMRO and First Nations conversations at this table. So we're very excited about that one.
Now, what about the conference? What will you be doing there?
Yeah, definitely. So it's a 3-day conference that will take part in Melbourne. What we do there, so it's an amazing conference where there's a lot of thought leadership conversations. So we'll be hosting a panel there with our women that we'll be bringing along with us. Again, another significant thing that we're doing is we're wanting to bring along 30 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women from industry to join us, so have them part of the conversation as well. So yes, to a panel. We'll have a booth there as well for anyone who's keen to come along and have a yarn and to learn more. So we'll have a booth and then we'll do a couple of interviews and a few other fun things as well.
Well, if our listeners can get over to Melbourne, it's January 31st to the 2nd of February at the Melbourne Showgrounds. So maybe you might need to quarantine. But we don't know what's going to happen up there. We've got no idea.
Who knows?
Now, what about most days? What do you get up to? I'm really keen to know as a co-founder and CEO. You must have a very busy schedule.
No, I definitely do, Chris. You know, like I do a lot of planning, you know, a lot of proposals, a lot of projects that I really want to push out and push through. I've been very blessed with a lot of opportunities. You know, pre-COVID, we were traveling a lot, meeting and greeting a lot of amazing people around the world. And we really want to try and continue that now in the new normal. But what that does mean for us is a lot of planning as well and a lot of, I guess, pivoting, the good old word for COVID. So but that's what we do. We do have networking events and we have been visiting a few schools as well around the place when we can to kind of get out there and have a chat to our young people as well around considering a career in mining as well.
Now, when you get across to Melbourne, going back to IMARC, I guess you'll be talking about your website with the job board, which looks pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. So with IWMRO as well, we're trying to find how do we service our network most effectively and really looking to partner with good people in the industry as well with good values and great initiatives. So not trying to recreate the wheel. We're just really looking to collaborate with a lot of good people. Yes to our current job board that we have now, but most excitingly, Chris, we do have a new digital platform that's developing as well. And that's in line as well with our organic growth with IWMRO into the international space still. We're really investing well into our relationships there because they are important to us. So our new digital platform, which will be launched later on in the year, we really look to grow our relationships internationally as well, and still serviced around employment, procurement, and some really good engagement pieces there as well for Indigenous peoples.
And having a glance through the jobs, they're quite varied.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. You know, it's one of the things that was recognised earlier on in the piece and as well now with our inclusion and diversity initiatives is the role for women across the industry. So both internally in organisations, but also across the supply chain as well. So we're continuing to highlight these opportunities and making them accessible for women to aspire to. But at the same time as well, ensuring that we're taking ownership of, you know, building our own capacity and our networks to get in front of these people as well and making sure that we're ready for these roles.
Well, I hope you don't get embarrassed here, but I want to talk about the Sustainable Minerals Institute. You were recently welcomed. What's all this about?
Yes, well, you know, we do some amazing things. And again, you know, it's a really great space to really, really thrive in, Chris. I've been really blessed to create this opportunity with many amazing people. But, you know, when I first started learning about Indigenous engagement in the mining and resources space, I read a lot of non-Indigenous authors that were writing about us, you know, and I was very grateful for them in sharing our stories and our circumstances. But what I was really aiming towards is how do we actually take ownership of that narrative and contribute and actually be writing these things about us, because it's our lived experience that really drive us to do great things and to do sustainable things for our community. So earlier on in the year, it was actually a very surreal experience, because these are people that I really admire and look up to and look to as well for authority in the industry. So I got the opportunity to head over for a few weeks to the Institute, and then we've co-authored a paper now as well, which is still in development, but it's another kind of feather in my cap in terms of being a co-author for a paper. So that's amazing. So thank you for that.
Oh, absolute pleasure. So this is with Joni Parmenta, Indigenous Women's Participation in the Australian Mining Industry, right?
Yes, she's an amazing woman. She writes very passionately about our people, and her intentions are very true. So I'm very happy to work with her.
All right, Florence, last one here. One of your greatest achievements recently, well, we go back to last year, don't we? The Global Top 100 Most Influential Women in Mining 2020. You joined the party.
Holy moly, yes, I sure did. And thank you, Chris. This has been an amazing call. But yes, so last year, again, Women in Mining UK, so they do an award biannually. Every second year. So for the past 8 years, they've recognised and awarded amazing women within the sector globally. So these are leaders who have been leading this space for some time. And yes, I was very fortunate to be recognised as one as well. And, you know, it is important as well for us to continue thriving and striving, because you can't be what you can't see. And I love the most that even if I have to push myself outside of my comfort zone to ensure that I create this space for other women, then I'm more than happy to do so.
Thank you, Florence. We'll let you get on with your day, and I'm sure more accolades will come your way. Take it easy.
Chris, you're amazing. Thank you so much.
And good morning to one of our regulars who's always busy at the CME. Hello, Rob Carruthers.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. More importantly, how are the calf muscles?
So far, so good. Yes, I know what you're referring to. There's been a bit of training going on for a big charity cycling event that we're doing in a couple of weeks' time, and looking forward to getting some serious K's under the belt.
Well, let's talk about that. It's the Ocean to Outback. I believe it's 8 days of riding, yeah?
Yes, we'll be departing from Perth and riding our way through the northern and eastern goldfields out to Laverton, which is a pretty remote community out there, but one that's really central to the resources industry and the history of gold development in the state. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there and seeing some vast open spaces, but also importantly raising money for the young and disadvantaged Indigenous people out in those parts, and hopefully providing the gift of, you know, bikes and the freedom that comes from being able to get around on two wheels to them as well.
So, Rob, can our listeners go to the CME website and make a donation and assist?
Yeah, look, I certainly encourage anyone who's keen to make a donation. It all goes through to a not-for-profit who's been running this event for a number of years and has really developed some great relationships out in the northern eastern goldfields and delivering some great outcomes. So we'll be suffering away, but the the money that will flow through to those in need is the important part of it all.
Yeah, suffering away 151 Ks per day. That seems to be the average. I hope you've been training well for that.
I'm hoping to build up some fitness along the way, Chris. I'll talk to you afterwards and maybe give you a rundown then.
All right. Well, good luck with the Ocean to Outback. As far as CME news goes, there's quite a bit going on. We had the release of the WA government's Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Strategy. What's the nuts and bolts of that one, Rob?
Look, this strategy that's been developed by the Department of Mines and Industry has been in the works for a while. There's been a broader diversified WA strategy that the McGowan put out in the last term, and this is really the resources arm of that. And look, we acknowledge that there's some great strategic priorities set out in that document, and we're really looking for government to put the foot to the pedal in terms of driving some tangible improvement in efficiencies and productivity, particularly in the approval space. Well, we've got so much on the go at the moment. We've talked before about the vast array of projects that are on perspective and in the pipeline. So we really need to make sure that tangible efforts are made around streamlining some of those regulatory processes and making sure they're efficient.
And awards are coming up. Department of Mines, Industry, Regulation and Safety, the 2021 Resources Sector Awards for Excellence. Are there different categories for this?
Yes. Look, this is an event that's been run. It's really become a bit of a highlight in the year, particularly around environmental excellence in our sector, known affectionately as the Golden Geckos. And there's a number of our CME members who have been nominated as part of some of those categories. I'll run through a couple really quickly. Luca Resources has been shortlisted for Flora Restorer, which is a tractor-pulled piece of equipment that's driving some innovative revegetation outcomes at the Eneabba mine site in the Midwest of WA. There's also a nomination or a shortlist there from Agnew's Hybrid Renewables Energy Project, and this is seeing Goldfields operation out there running majority on off-grid power from renewables during the day in particular. So that's a great one and has been well documented up until now. And probably the third one to highlight, which is something that CME has been promoting a lot of late and have had a lot of buy-in into, is Premier Coal down in the southwest in Collie has transformed one of its former open pit coal mines into a lake, Lake Kapawari. And it's a beautiful 100-hectare-odd water body that's attracting many visitors to that region. So that's a really exciting outcome as well. And I'm sure that'll be well considered by the award judges.
And Northern Minerals, they're always in the news, but this one's quite significant.
It is significant, and it's great to see Northern Minerals getting the sort of acknowledgement that it deserves. It really is at the forefront of seeking to diversify supply chains of heavy rare earths outside of the PRC, and they've been doing a fair bit of activity up there around multi-month, multi-million dollar drilling campaigns at Browns Range, which is up in the East Kimberley, and they've found some pretty exciting deposits with some pretty innovative technology, including some X-ray technology, which has uncovered some additional tritium up there in wide zones, which is used in alloys, as well as dysprosium and terbium oxide, which are very important core ingredients for future energy and battery storage as well. So whilst I'm no expert in the periodic table, I do know that those heavy rare earths are absolutely crucial to our future needs, and we really need to have a diverse supply chain for those, and it's exciting what Northern Minerals is uncovering in the north of our state.
So, Rob, on a final note, this is a really goodwill story. Alcoa, their partnership with Anglicare WA. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is a good news story in terms of the work that Alcoa and Anglicare in WA have done really over the last year or so coming out of COVID, and this has been a program partnership to support residents down there with financial counselling and family support and also some mental health services as well. And this spreads across Alcoa's footprint in the southwest through Kwinana, which is close to Perth, and further south in terms of Murray, Waroona and Harvey. So across all of those regions, there's over 1,000, I think 1,050 was the most recent count who have made use of these services. And as I said, it's a really great partnership to extend the support and really help out people who have been in need in these challenging times. And yeah, we're certainly nowhere near out of the COVID challenges at the moment, but it's nice to know that there's some supports out there for those that need it.
Some of the segments on Mining HQ are produced under commercial agreement. For more information, email mininghq@mmm.com.au.
Joining us today is the Managing Director of Azura Minerals, Tony Rivera. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Pablo.
Now, we want to dig into Azura's flagship Andover Nickel Copper project. Tell us a little bit about how it's all progressing.
Actually, it's going really well at the moment. Who would have thought that you could just be a few kilometres south of Roebourne and discover what looks like a very substantial nickel and copper sulphide deposit with the potential for finding a lot more deposits on the project? It's quite remarkable, not only its location, but just how well the project is developing at the moment.
So what's the end game here for Azura and the Andover project, Tony?
Well, we got stuck into the exploration about 12 months ago and started drilling and immediately had great success. And we've actually got three drill rigs drilling round the clock at the moment. And the project is progressing incredibly well. We've drilled over 95 drill holes now for 42,000 metres of diamond drilling. And almost every hole that we've drilled has hit nickel and copper sulfide mineralization. So we were already in the process of firming up the what we call the VC7 East resource. The mineral resource for that is going to be published in the first quarter of next year. And we've also found good nickel and copper mineralization in at least two other target zones, which we'll be drilling into the resource category as well. So the intention is that we basically grow this project to the stage where it is economic to build a mine. And we already can predict that with some confidence that this is going to be a very substantial project going forward.
Now, I believe you got some other projects in West Australia as well.
Well, that's true. We also, in addition to the Andover Nickel project, which is very much our focus at the moment, and it's where we're spending most of our time and money, we also have two other gold projects which look really exciting as well. One of them is located just to the south of Leonora in the Kukini Gold District, and we've got 200 square kilometres there. It's called the Barton Project. We own that one 100%, and it's only just been granted last month. We're getting stuck into the exploration already, and I'd anticipate that we should be drilling on that project in the next month or two. Around us, our next door neighbours around Barton have had great success recently with a lot of new gold discoveries being drilled. And so I've got high hopes that Barton will be able to produce the goods as far as a new gold deposit goes as well. And the second of the gold projects is called Turner River. It's located just to the south of Port Hedland. And importantly, it's located just to the north of De Grey Mining's Mallina Gold Project, where they've had this massive big gold discovery called Hemi, which has got multi-millions of ounces of gold already identified, and it's growing all the time. And the geology that we've got on our Turner River project is very similar to what De Grey have got on their Mallina project at their Hemi deposit. So although the Turner River tenements have not been granted yet, and therefore there's been no exploration done on them in the past, as soon as those tenements are granted by the Mines Department, we'll be out there exploring that as well and hopefully finding a repetition of what De Grey have got at their Hemi deposit. So yeah, basically, you know, with a nickel deposit at Andover and two really exciting gold projects, we're looking really strong at Azure Minerals now.
If you want to keep up to date with all those projects happening around regional WA, jump online at azureminerals.com.au. Tony, thanks so much for joining us this morning on Mining HQ.
Absolute pleasure, Pablo. Thank you.
Good morning to David Julian Price. Good morning, David.
Good morning, good morning.
Let me formally introduce you. All sorts of things that you do: speaking, pitch coach, meetings advisor, impartial chairperson for difficult meetings. That sounds interesting. Meeting diagnostics, strategic planning, and a facilitator. How did you get into this business to start with, David?
Oh, that was a long, long time ago, Chris. That was almost 40 years ago, 35 years ago. So look, I got into the business. I was a school teacher. And I was seconded to work at the ABC, as in the
Broadcaster Commission as a teacher working on their education programs. And there I realised there was a lot more to teaching than I realised. And so when I left the ABC, I decided I'd look for something else. And so I went into training in public speaking. I'd been asked to run a couple of public speaking courses. And I went into that area. And the rest is history, as they say, except that at the same time, I joined an organisation that was really big at the time, but isn't so large now, and that's Rostrum. Rostrum is a public speaking organisation, but it also teaches meetings. And I found that I really enjoyed the meetings side of that, particularly the meeting procedure. And so since then, I've written a few books on speaking and meetings, and I advise on meetings, local governments and other groups, not-for-profits particularly, on how to run meetings. And here I am today still doing that.
Well, David, as you know, some people, it's a real fear, it's a real phobia getting up in front of others with public speaking. How do you go about improving those people?
Well, look, it all comes down to fear. So the people who are nervous, if you drill way, way, way down right into what's making them nervous, it's about a fear. And it's a fear of making a fool of themselves. They fear they're going to look silly. The reality is that almost no one does. You know, there's an occasional person who does look silly, but most people don't actually ever have happen to them what they are terrified will happen. And so a lot of it is self-talk. It really is building the self-confidence that they're going to be fine. And so that's what I spend a lot of time working on, giving people an understanding that they really are going to be fine. And I do that usually by just having a conversation with them. I ask them some basic questions, and before they know it, they're speaking in front of a group of people just answering my questions, and that's speaking, and nothing ever happens to them. Surprise, surprise. They still live, and they're still well, and yet they've done what they were terrified of doing, and that is stand up and speak in front of a group of people.
Now, I'm sure a lot of your business, like all good businesses, is word of mouth. Have you worked with a lot of MDs from mining companies?
I've done a couple of work with some with mining companies. Not so much, but although in the past I most certainly have. I remember one of my most interesting jobs was for Santos, and it was at Moomba. And Moomba, as your listeners will know, is out in the middle of the desert in South Australia. And I had a group of engineers. And my brief was to coach these engineers in how to deliver their technical information to people like bankers who didn't have the technical background. And it was a challenge, of course, because engineers think that it's all about the technical side of things. But for their particular audience, their audience wasn't interested in the technical detail. They just wanted to know the end result. And so I put it into a very simple formula. You've got to give the audience the so what. Giving them information and giving them data is of little value unless they understand, well, so what? Why do I need to know this information? Why is this data important? Technical people particularly are a challenge because they live and breathe the detail, and the detail is so important to them in their day-to-day job, but it's actually not that important when it comes to communicating it. They have to communicate why that information is important and what, as I say, the so what of that information is.
Now, I remember being at Diggers and Dealers quite a few years ago, and it's almost like that was that was the barometer of how the speaker was going. If the smartphone started coming out in abundance, I don't think it was going so well.
That's exactly right, yeah. I mean, Diggers and Dealers is a very harsh environment and in many ways a very, very judgmental environment. And so if you don't grab the audience quick, then you're not going to grab them at all, and they'll make judgments. There's some really interesting research that's just come out, Chris, just a few weeks ago, about the audience's judgment of a speaker's intelligence. And it is that if the speaker is a great speaker, they judge the speaker to be highly intelligent. The reverse is also the case. Now, you and I know that that's obviously intellectually or factually incorrect, but the audience still makes judgments, and to them, in their own mind, their judgments are accurate and correct. So they judge poor speakers very harshly, and they judge good speakers very highly.
So, David, you spoke about certain pitfalls, like engineers maybe getting caught up in too much detail and the so what was really important. What other pitfalls do you see with reoccurrence?
Oh, look, I think the issue is engagement. If a person speaking to an audience, and it doesn't matter whether it's a toolbox meeting, a board meeting, it doesn't matter, or speaking, giving a presentation at a conference or at a meeting, the engagement is the key. And you engage by, there's a line that we use, you engage by entering the conversation going on in the mind of the listener. So if the listener is there for a particular purpose, then it's that purpose that the person speaking or presenting has to understand, know, and enter that conversation. So you take people from where they are to where you want them to be. The mistake that a lot of people make is they take the audience directly where they want them to be. And that very rarely works, because you need to take the audience on the journey with you to show them what it is you're talking about, the context, the relevance, and then what it is you want them to know or do or change or react to or respond. So you need to take the audience on a journey, and that journey is a journey of engagement. If you don't have the audience engaged, your message will never get across.
And what about speakers that you admire? It could be WA, national, global?
Oh, look, the speakers I admire, may not be known to other people, but Michael McQueen is one. He's a great speaker. He's out of Sydney. He's a professional speaker, does conferences all over the world. Lisa McGuinness-Smith is another one in that regard. Gihan Pereira, who's a local speaker here in Perth, but speaks all over the world. He's an amazing speaker. But people see different things in speakers. What the people I admire may not be admired by other people, and vice versa. But it's the people who understand that they understand a crucial point, and that is that a great presentation is about content and delivery. Whereas most people actually spend all their time on content, it's the delivery that's important, because you can have the best content in the world, but if it's delivered poorly, then it's going to fail. So delivery is so, so important.
And if our listeners go to your website, David Julian Price, I believe you've got a free copy, a book. Does that give lots of pointers and tips?
Yes, it does. Yeah, david@davidprice.com. People will be able to get a copy of my book. It's called 10 Steps on How to Deliver a Powerful Presentation. It's really easy. I wrote it for speaking, Chris, but the really interesting thing about it is, after it had been out a little while, people said to me, you know, I use your book to write my uni assignments. And I went back and I thought, well, I never wrote it from that perspective. But people, I have people who say, can I have a copy of your book for my son or daughter who's doing ATAR or at uni, because it helps them write their assignments. And it made me realise that writing an assignment is exactly the same process as writing a presentation or a speech. But yes, david@davidprice.com is my website, and people can find a lot of resources there.
Hello to the executive chairman from Antipa Minerals. He's on the phone right now, Stephen Powell. How are you, Stephen?
I'm good. Thank you for speaking to me today.
Well, I feel like a newsreader here, which I'm not, but the headlines read, Antipa Minerals unearths robust gold copper hits up to 362 metres in Minyara Dome drilling. Shares are up. Can you fill us in? That's great news.
It was a fairly stunning result we pulled out. A diamond hole, 362 metre intersection, which is, that's very large. And 1.4 grams per tonne gold and 0.16% copper, included an intersection, a sub-intersection of 78 metres at 2 grams per tonne gold. So, that's very significant.
Now, this goes back many, many years. I guess if we go back to the beginning anyway of 2021, a lot of capital raising was going on for you?
Yeah, look... at the start of the year, we have a very significant ground holding in the Paterson, over 5,000 square kilometres. But this is, Minyara is on our 100% owned ground. And really, we sort of decided that, look, we want to get into a position where we can decide whether Minyari has the legs necessary for just an open pit, maybe, because it's 40 kilometres north of the Telfer mine at Newcrest, and we could truck the ore down to there and toll treat it. So whether we had something like that, an opportunity like that, or whether perhaps it was bigger and we were sitting on perhaps a company maker. And that's what we wanted to, that's what we wanted to find out. And so we've been drilling all year with some few diamond drills there, and we've only got a third of the assays in it in Minyari so far, but it really is, with results like this, it really is pushing us into thinking that we've perhaps got something more like the Havieron deposit of Greatland Gold and Newcrest, which is just the other side of Telfer to us.
Now, there must be so much planning that goes into this. I was looking at your background. You've been with the company for 10 years, so you could tell quite a story when you go back over those years to get to this point.
Yes, overnight sensation. That's all I can say. really, what we did was, the Paterson Province was a very unfashionable part of the world as far as exploration, gold and copper exploration went. We went in there because it was a proven Tier 1 province. You know, that you had the Telfer mine itself, now owned by Newcrest, and that was pre-mining. That was 32 million ounces of gold and a million tonnes of copper. So that's world class. And so we looked at it, and it was underexplored because it's covered with desert sands. And I don't know, some of your listeners have been out to the Great Sandy Desert, but really foreboding but beautiful territory. But that really preserved the exploration. And now you can, with a new exploration technique, you can see under the cover of desert sand, and that's why we're coming up with discoveries like Minyari and Calibre up north with Rio.
So what do you think makes Paterson Province so unique? I mean, we go back with Rio with their discovery years ago.
Look, I think that really it's the ability to generate these very large deposits. I'm not a geologist by trade myself. I've come from a legal background, and I hope nobody holds that against me. But really, it's that ability to generate these really large deposits, which we're which we see up in our Calibre deposit up, which we have a 65-35 joint venture with Rio Tinto in the north. We've got something there that basically is 1.5 kilometres, has a strike of 1.5 kilometres. So it is, it really is a very large deposit up there as well. And we're chasing down at Minyari. We own it 100%. It's something that we can do ourselves. And really that's, we're looking to push that into a production sort of scenario. But we think that we could be sitting on something that could be world-class, really.
Well, as a explorer, you've got some great JVs. Do you want to talk about your JV partners?
Yeah, sure. If we start up the north, that's it. I've mentioned with Rio Tinto, they farmed into our ground. So what we did was we put all this land holding together with all of this these tenements, and Rio Tinto came in at the start. We had some very low. We discovered Calibre. We're getting some really big, long intersections like we just showed with Minyari, a bit lower grade, and Rio came in with us. So now we're in there with a 65-35 joint venture. We've got an inferred resource up there of 2.7 million gold equivalent ounces. So it's got some gold and copper in that, and also some, we're carrying out a fair bit of exploration with them there. We come down in the south, and we've got also a farm in. So Newcrest is paying all the bills to get in further south in the Wilkie joint venture, and they're also a 9.9% shareholder in our company as well. And then in the centre, surrounding our 100% owned ground, is a farm in again with IGO. So we've got some first-rate joint venture partners, and I think it reflects the first rate ground that we put together, which everyone now, you can't get hold of.
And looking at the last quarter of the year, which we're almost into, more drilling?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be at Minyari with our ears pinned back, that's for sure. So we've got a few diamond rigs up there, which we won't be letting go. They'll stay up there and just drill it out to see what we've got. You know, that's what we're doing. In the rest of our provinces, I mean, if you put it all together, the drilling, there's over 75,000 metres of drilling going ahead. With a combined spend of pretty much over $45 million. So there is a lot of activity on our tenements, which, you know, will have great news flow. And, look, we think we're a bit of an unsung, you know, sort of story here. But we will definitely, you know, force ourselves in front of people's, you know, forefront of people's minds, I think.
Stephen, what would you say to our listeners to become potential shareholders?
I'd say I don't know of any other company with our market cap in Australia which holds such a first-rate piece of ground, first-class piece of ground, and with so much money being spent, which will then turn into an increase in share price, or should. And basically, we're also sitting on something that Greatland Gold with Havieron went from a couple of p to £10. Yeah, and they're the other side of Telfer, and we think we can do the same.
We're catching up with Chris Lemessurier for the news of the week. Good morning, Chris, and we'll start with that first headline: zero emission autonomous haul trucks for Rio Tinto.
Yes, Rio Tinto, they'll be the first to deploy Caterpillar's 793 zero-emission autonomous haul trucks. That's once development is complete at the Gaudi-Dari iron ore mine in WA. The two companies, they've agreed to a prototype pilot program for the 793 fleet, with testing and pre-production trials still to come. The 220-ton trucks will form another piece of Rio Tinto's most technically advanced iron ore mine, which will ramp up to its first production over the coming few years. Rio Tinto Chief Commercial Officer Alf Barrios said agreements such as this, they're key to the company's targets at Gaudi-Adari. Their ambition is to reach net zero emissions across all operations being a priority. Reaching this ambition will require new and innovative solutions and partnerships with suppliers like CAT. This collaboration represents a small but important step on that journey. The announcement came after the companies agreed to pioneer Caterpillar's autonomous water trucks at the same time. That's in a further step to lower emissions and increase productivity.
Now, what's this regarding a new partnership with FMG?
Fortescue Metals Group and members of the Wintawara Gurrama Aboriginal Corporation, they've partnered to develop new mines at Fortescue's Solomon Hub operations in our state. The 10-year mine services contract will be awarded to the new joint venture, and it's estimated to be worth over $500 million, making the contract the largest ever awarded to an Aboriginal business by Fortescue. Under the co-management framework, Fortescue and members of Wintawara, the prescribed body corporate for the Eastern Gurrama people, will establish a culturally safe mining joint venture to mine the East and West Queen deposits. A working group will be formed, working together on all stages of the mine development. The agreement builds on the decade-long relationships, I should say, between the parties, which was formalised in a land access agreement way back in December 2009.
Now, Chris, what's happening at Roy Hill?
Roy Hill will purchase the world's first fully battery-powered heavy haul locomotive from Pittsburgh-based Wabtec. Glad I got that out. That'll transform the cost of transporting iron ore from pit to port. The FLX drive locomotive will arrive on Australian shores in 2023, when Roy Hill will use it to haul iron through the heat of WA's Pilbara region. Roy Hill General Manager of Engineering Simon Pascoe said the purchase combined low cost with high productivity. From 2023, the FLX Drive will replace one of the diesel electric models. The FLX Drive recharges during the trip while under braking and has a trip optimizer system, an intelligent cruise system to minimize energy consumption. Webpack Freight Equipment President Rodrigo Mendoca said the FLX drive would go a long way to helping WabTech achieve its goals.
Now, I believe that BHP is increasing shiploading.
BHP Iron Ore has received authorization to increase ship loadings throughout Port Hedland premises from 290 million tonnes per year to 330 million tonnes per year. The application to amend BHP's current license was made in mid-2020, and the Department of Water Environment Regulation gave its approval this month, so that's great news. However, the approval was subject to BHP fulfilling both noise and dust control requirements. BHP is committed to the long-term sustainable future of the Pilbara as an economic powerhouse, both during and post the COVID-19 recovery, Day said.
On Triple M, Mining HQ. Thanks to Programmed. Work in mining, rail or trades? Find your perfect role with Programmed.
Outback Australia is big, real big. So when accidents happen, what do you do?
Just let me die, she kept saying, take it all away.
By the time he'd come back, the helicopter had actually completely burnt out.
The Flying Doctor podcast shares stories of Australians who found themselves in scary and unexpected situations needing the Royal Flying Doctor Service for help. You never know. One day, the person being rescued could be you. Search the Flying Doctor podcast. Download the new Listener app now and listen for free.
Listener.